The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
WhatsApp us this morning, 087 1400 106, or email the programme clareburn@newstalk.com. Well, the government won its confidence vote last night, but lost a government minister as Michael Healy-Rae announced his resignation. Here was the moment he stepped down.
When I see people begging on the side of the road, when I've seen grown men crying, last night inside in the plough bar, when I met tractor men, lorry men, farmers, and when they were telling me how unhappy they were, the leader of the country should have listened. And because of the fact that I believe this government have left the people of Ireland down, I will be voting no confidence in the leader of the country, and I will be tendering my resignation as a Minister of State from now.
In a moment, I'll speak to Independent TD for Sligo Leitrim and Minister of State Marion Hark and also disability campaigner Tracy Carroll. But I'm joined firstly by News Talk's political correspondent Sean Defoe. Sean, good morning to you. It seemed as though this was pretty much a complete surprise to the government. So talk us through what we know about how it came about yesterday, or what led up to Michael Healy-Rae's resignation.
Yeah, it certainly caught the ministers, the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach all on the hop. You could kind of see a build-up to it happening as Mary Butler, the Chief Whip, consulted with Michael Healy-Rae a number of times yesterday in the Dáil Chamber just before his speech. And we had all been on alert that Danny Healy-Rae was very likely not to support the government and to vote no confidence. And what seems to have happened, I suppose there's different versions of events. If you take Michael Healy-Rae's version of events as he put it to us, first of all, was that obviously he was in these talks over the weekend. He was involved in negotiating the €500 million in package of supports for hauliers and farmers and the excise cut that was voted through last night. And speaking to ministers who were in that meeting with him, and some of those meetings, they said they had no inkling really that he wasn't going to back the government, and that was their impression coming out of it. He'd negotiated the deal and therefore he would vote for it and stick with the government. But Michael himself says that while that was ongoing, he was speaking to people who were on the protest line, speaking to people in Kerry, and with his own background, as he would say himself, of, you know, being a jigger driver, of a truck driver, of owning a plant hire business, and that he had a great deal of sympathy with them and felt that the government wasn't giving enough and wasn't going to give enough to satisfy them. He was also quite critical of Micheál Martin's leadership of the entire thing, but of the government in general, saying he has grave reservations about Micheál Martin as Taoiseach. Now, the other track that was going on here is Danny Healy-Rae. And as we said, the expectation was he wasn't going to vote with the government. There was obviously meetings had within the two sides of the family, the Danny side and Michael's side. And ultimately, there is a feeling that there couldn't be a split in the empire, if you like, that there wasn't going to be a case where the Healy-Rae's would have one member in and one member out of government and try to campaign on that basis. This mm-hmm. is a grouping, if not a party, that sends out leaflets with both of their faces on it, joint leaflets telling people in different parts of Kerry what way to vote. Vote number one, Danny, in this area. Vote number one, Michael, in this area, and give your twos accordingly. And that the subsequent split, I suppose, wasn't worth the ultimate damage electorally it could do.
Okay, so let's talk about then how the government looks after this. And in particular, there's a lot of focus on Fianna Fáil, or let's start with Fianna Fáil firstly, because Jim O'Callaghan, as we know, came in for a lot of criticism following his press statement last Thursday about the Defence Forces being ready to help the Gardaí. Is there a sense that the notion of him as being the front runner for the next leader of Fianna Fáil, that his position in that regard is damaged now?
Definitely. And even more so after yesterday, when he gave a Dáil speech that didn't reference the army at all or anything that he had done, and wasn't seen to give any sort of a mea culpa, sort of suggested that anyone who was criticising the guards were criticising him, and didn't really address a lot of the things that his government colleagues even would have wanted to see addressed. There is certainly a bit of a rift there in this idea that he is the absolute front runner or the favourite to replace Micheál Martin, I think, is damaged. And it's an interesting one, because if you do take the long term view that Micheál Martin, one way or another, is unlikely to be the leader, and there's various views in Fianna Fáil as to when that will be it at the changeover when he becomes Taoiseach, be it ahead of the next election or even later. You now have the two front runners for that, his seeming chosen one in Jack Chambers, incredibly damaged after the presidential election and the Jim Gavin fiasco, and now Jim O'Callaghan very, very significantly damaged after this, as well as Micheál Martin himself taking an awful lot of flack.
You'd wonder whether the timeline on the leadership change has shifted now as a result of what happened.
Potentially. I mean, there's no clear favourite now. Maybe eyes have been turning towards Dara O'Brien in some of the people that I have been speaking to. There's others like James Lawless who've said that they want to lead the party in future. Hard to see Norma Foley putting the hand up, and Dara Cleary is maybe not really seen as a leadership type. They all have problems with them is what I'm saying. And perhaps as a result of that, Micheál Martin clings on longer. I've never really bought into this idea that he's the a person who will step away in the way that other Taoiseach have, it by dint that he lives for the job. Mm-hmm. And we have predicted his downfall many, many times, that he was going to take a European commissionership, that he was going to do this, that and the other. And even though Micheál Martin is very personally damaged by this, ironically, it may see him staying as leader of Fianna Fáil longer.
Yeah. And it's a strange one, really, isn't it? Because Fine Gael has traditionally been the party of the farmers, and yet they don't seem to be getting as much political flack for this. I mean, most of the focus is on Patrick O'Donovan eating people without salt, calling for investigations into all sorts of media organisations. But right at the top of the party, there doesn't seem to be the same level of criticism that Fianna Fáil is getting.
No, I think Simon Harris's leadership being newer also just helps in that. You know, he is a newer leader. There's not an immediate challenger to him either that has the credentials within Fine Gael. You've seen an awful lot of the heavy hitters step away over the last few years. Maybe if Pascal Donoghue was still on the pitch, some people would be looking to him now. He's obviously gone. Leo Varadkar, Simon Coveney, all these people who were seen as putative leaders of Fine Gael are now off doing other things and entirely out of politics. But there is still pressure on Simon Harris, I think, overall, just an acceptance that maybe there isn't someone like Helen McEntee, who took an awful lot of flack as Justice Minister, hasn't really recovered from that. Patrick O'Donovan, as you say, I mean, the line arguably of the debate yesterday was when Ivana Bacic was criticising him and said, goodbye Viktor Orban, hello Patrick O'Donovan, mm-hmm. for his stance on media freedom and media rights, which got a laugh even from the Taoiseach in the tall chamber, and tells you maybe where the mood is on that. And Simon Harris himself slapping down Patrick O'Donovan's suggestion the Cumhachan na mBan should be investigating the media is really all you need to know on
okay,
that.
Okay, well Sean, stay with us if you can, because I want to bring in Marion Harkin at this point. Good morning to you, Marion.
Good morning, Claire, to all your listeners.
Did you know that Michael Healy-Rae was going to do what he did yesterday?
No, I didn't. There were straws in the wind. I mean, obviously, we heard what Danny had said 2 days beforehand about the need for change of leadership of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. I mean, that was a very strong statement. And of course, as you know, Danny and Michael had a separate arrangement. They weren't part of our group. I was part of the negotiations for the independent group. There were three of us negotiated on the programme for government. And it was only when that was complete, I knew Danny and Michael were in it, out to speak to the Taoiseach. But when that was complete, then we realised that I think, as I'm not sure, was it Danny or Michael said, they were the fourth leg of the stool.
Uh-huh. And so they got a completely different deal to the one that you got.
Oh, yes, they were. I mean, I worked with Michael. Michael was a great colleague. I sat beside him in the Dáil, a really hardworking minister. And, you know, in that context, I am genuinely sorry to see him go. I think he was a real addition to government, but they had a separate deal, nothing to do with independence, the rest of us, but we worked together and we worked well together.
Okay. What do you make of his decision? Because there are those who will say, well, this is a man who stood by his principles, who was courageous and who walked out when he needed to. There are others who will say, well, Michael Healy-Rae, when the going gets tough, he's gone back down to Kerry, back to his constituency, and he's not fit for national politics and he's not fit for government. So where do you stand?
Look, Claire, you have to understand that Michael is a colleague, and I will let Michael speak for himself and I'll let people make their own judgment. Every one of us yesterday had decisions to make, and Michael's decision is the one that's obviously all over the news and people are interested in, but he's given his explanations. He mm-hmm. said what he said. As I said, the hints were there before that. For anyone who looks back, we can see they were very clear, because their deal was totally separate. It was a Healy-Rae package with the Taoiseach. And how that turned out or what happened, that's between okay. Michael and the
but
Taoiseach.
You're, I mean, I would imagine, yeah. Marion, you're under similar pressure from your constituents in relation to what happened last week.
Yes, you're right. In all of this, we talk about some of the detail. We can never forget that there are so many people out there that are hurting and that are in real trouble and under real pressure. And I suppose one of the few small little positives is this morning I'm getting reports from people about the price of diesel coming down under €2 a litre. I know that's still an outrageous amount of money, but stuff is happening, and that makes a huge difference to many people. But so this something shifted last week. This wasn't just another protest, and I fully recognise that. And it's up to government to respond to that in the best way we can.
Yeah.
And I think the difference perhaps...
Yes. I'm just sorry now to cut a question, but I'm wondering, did you ever consider voting against the government?
No, because I looked carefully at the package. Last week, we were all very much involved in helping to negotiate this. Michael, as you said, was one of the negotiators, along with Sean Canny and Noel Grealish. Actually, three out of our five ministers were in there. The package is the best per capita in the EU. Before Easter, all of the opposition was telling us about Poland and about Spain and why couldn't we do what they were doing. This is better per capita. The figures show that clearly. Of course it's not enough. In this kind of situation, all of the people that are hurting, it's not enough. But it is better than anywhere else.
Yeah.
And what about
the wisdom, Marion, of spending €500 million on a situation which, you know, was driven by people who put tractors and trucks on the roads and prevented others from going about their business. Are you comfortable with that?
I'd put it this way. The vast majority of people who were out there were people we know. So let's put that. There weren't people we didn't know. There weren't people who came from somewhere else with their agendas. There was a level of infiltration. We know that. We know it from the level of abuse that people are getting and have got, whether it's drivers who are driving fuel trucks, whether it's Gardaí, whether it's politicians, threats, abuse, etc. We know there is a small group in there, but we also know that a lot of the people on those protests were our neighbours, were people we know. Mm-hmm. And they were out there because they were saying to us, in all honesty, I cannot turn a pound. When I go out tomorrow, whether it's a bus driver bringing kids to school, whether it's an agri contractor doing work for a farmer, they're saying to us, I'm losing money. And when people are losing money, they know their businesses are under threat. So that was very real. And I think that's why the package was robust and it's as good as it is. And yes, it's still a challenge, but it's a package that I could support. And Claire, apart from all that, if I voted no yesterday, and I had no thought of it, to be honest with you, once I saw what was put in place, what we'll be looking at? We'd be looking at chaos, no package, nothing for people. Today, if a government fell into a general election, where would we be with all of this?
Well, that's the risk that Michael Healy-Ray and Danny Healy-Ray took, which is why some people are critical of them today. Marion, I'm going to leave it there, but thank you for joining us this morning. In a moment, I'll come to Tracy Carroll, but just back, Sean Defoe, to you for a moment, because I want to talk to you about, just briefly, the opposition in all of this, because we don't have a united opposition in relation to fuel, do we?
No, I think that was pretty clear yesterday. They were all voting against the government, but voting in different ways and with different solutions to it. And even Jed Nash, the Labour TD, who had so much difficulty on with you the other day explaining how they would have ended the blockade, said the opposition has to do better to avoid things like this. But obviously people don't feel they are getting proper representation through their TDs or through their unions. And they had took this protest then to go on the streets and shut the country down. If you look at the different packages that people are offering, I mean, Sinn Féin, you're talking big about their getting rid of the carbon tax, and also there's energy credits, etc. The likes of Labour and Social Democrats mainly focusing on energy credits. And then you have People for Profit coming out with a somewhere between 5 and 6.7 billion euro package, which just would entirely sink any surplus that the government had for this year. So it is split, it is diverse, and it is one that I think if you were looking to you know, a united opposition that could take down the government to come out of this debate yesterday. That's absolutely not what we got. What is interesting, actually, some people in Fianna Fáil trying to put a happy spin on this today, saying that actually they wonder if the departure of the Healy Rays will improve cohesion in the government, because they won't have to go out defending Michael Healy Ray having a different position to others, some of his other ministers. And in fact, one cabinet minister telling me this morning when I asked him his reaction, and all he said was good riddance.
All right, Sean, thank you very much. That's Sean Defoe. And I want to come to Tracy Carroll now, who's been listening to all of that. Tracy, thanks so much for being with us this morning. Your mother to Willow, and you missed an appointment, didn't you, last week because of the protest? You felt trapped in your home.
Yes, we missed an appointment last week, and now I have a following appointment that was cancelled for orthopaedic in Temple Street, which is actually really, really important. So the knock-on effect now is obviously taking hand, because people had to cancel appointments, couldn't attend appointments. So now they have to regroup and ensure that those missed appointments are looked after. So it pushes us further down the line. So we were impacted. Even at the weekend, there was blockage from Virginia outside Cavan right through into Navan. So, you know, our first point of call if Willow becomes unwell is to Cavan Hospital, and there's a concern then, you know, how do we get there? And not just us personally. I mean, I've spoken to many carers or people with children with disabilities or adults with disabilities or people looking for home support, and their services were cut. It almost felt like a mini pandemic again. And again, it's always the vulnerable who are left, you know, begging for scraps or completely ignored. And, you know, a protest, I really do understand, you know, the feelings of the farmers or the hauliers, or, you know, because we're all living this crisis. They're not the only cohort in society that are struggling with the cost of fuel rises, cost of everything, you know, groceries, heating your home. It we're all impacted. But a protest is one thing, but holding the country to ransom, which they did, had an impact on people that it shouldn't have impacted. I mean, the government weren't directly affected. Their buildings weren't blocked.
You know,
their constituency offices weren't blocked.
The protesters said, Tracy, that they were doing this for everybody. So they were doing it for you, and they were doing it for Willow.
No, they were not doing it for us. We are not in their thoughts at all. I mean, my husband was in Belfast last week, and he travelled the motorway. And what happened for him was the exit routes were blocked. So he had to go off the motorway, go over the flyover and down the other side. So whose cost is impacted there? My husband's. You know, so that's not supporting him. That's affecting him. The carers, disabled people, marginalised communities, vulnerable people, they weren't part of this protest and they were not considered in this protest. If there's direct payments to farmers, haulages, cash payments, we're not getting any of those. My concern now for this is when people need to look at the broader picture. We were all impacted by not being able to access fuel, the concern of if I don't have fuel in my car and Willow needs to go to the hospital, how do I get there? If I need an ambulance and they're impacted on their journey to my home, how do they get here? Caring for Willow is keeping her alive. So that is a massive impact to begin with. But then when we look forward into the budget and everybody is looking for, you know, a piece of the pot, there's only so much money that's going to go around. Mm-hmm. If all of this money has been invested in direct payments to these people, then where do we fit in this? And has this set the precedent for other protests? I believe the school buses are on strike in Meath this morning. Thankfully, we don't rely on bus services. So there's the start. Are we going to look at nurses going on strike? Are we going to look at teachers going on strike? Because if the government have bowed out to bullying by this protest, what's next? Who's going to do this next? You know, is this going to be a domino effect? And the people that are always penalised in this are the most vulnerable. We cannot down tools. What if every carer in nationally decided to down tools, park our cars, block the motorways, but leave our vulnerable people in the hands of the state? What would that look like?
So, Tracy, when you heard Michael Healy-Ray saying that he's listened to the workers of Ireland, the people who've soldiered with him over the years, and that he's always looked on himself as the gauge of the people of Ireland, and he saw people in tears at those protests and knew that he couldn't continue in government, what do you think?
I understand why he stepped down. To be honest, he's always been one that's kind of up against the man sort of thing. You know, he's always been very vocal in government, and if he's to stand by what you know he was elected for, then I don't think he really had a choice. So I understand why he did it, but I think we're giving too much airtime to this conversation. I think we need to actually really start looking at the broader picture. You know, what does this mean to the economy? What does this mean to the marginalised communities, to vulnerable people? What does this mean when we come to the budget? What's next? You know, I don't think the government were very strong in how they managed this.
Mm-hmm.
It went from being a protest to, you know, people getting involved that really just pushed it onto the next agenda. And they held the country to ransom. I mean, people should not be impacted by a protest. I have advocated since Willow was very, very young for carers, for disabled people. I have been in, you know, government conversations. I have been outside Leinster House, but we have never caused an impact to anybody else because, you know,
You should, you know, is that the lesson that we learn from this, that if you want something, that's what you have to do, what we saw last week?
But the government should not bow down to bullies, Claire. They should not bow down. They should look at, you know, the cost of living crisis for everybody and look at it collectively and how we actually support everybody. Disabled people, carers, have constantly been on their knees from day one. We're given empty promises all the time. You know, our services for our children, our CDNT teams, means tested for carers allowance, house adaption grants. There is no equity in what is provided for people mm-hmm. with disabilities. Inclusion is a word that's bounced around. There's no real inclusion in this country. If I have to change my daughter in the boot of a car, we can't access the most basic human right of a toilet. Like, how do we stand and say we support, you know, everybody nationally? We don't. And if you bow down to one cohort of bullies, what happens next? And it's always the vulnerable that are left forgotten about. And when it comes to the budget, and we're talking about, you know, everybody coming in, everybody's getting ready for the budget now, we're all putting in, you know, our asks, everybody's, you know, looking for their pot of the money.
The pie
but it has to be divvied out.
The pie is
and if
reduced.
There's a hole in it. Yes.
All right. Well, Tracy, we have to leave it there, but thank you for being with us. Tracy Carroll there, who's a disability campaigner and mother, as you heard her say there, to Willow. We heard from Sean Defoe and Marion Harkin there too. Now,
the Claire Byrne Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.